Hello and welcome to the Two Tones. It's episode 10. Tony Moclair, Tony DeBolfo. 4 degrees outside, Tony DeBolfo, and you could say, now is the very winter of our discontent.
Roll off the tongue beautifully there, Tone, you old Shakespearean thespian you. Look, it's been calamitous, hasn't it, to say the least. You know, just when you think you've emerged through the worst of it, we seem to find a new depth in which to plunge, and there's no end in sight. You know, you want to find a way out. There's no quick solution. I mentioned to you off air, Tony, a story that surfaced last week when I was penning an obituary for Lloyd Bendall, the long-serving director here at Carlton, and I rang David Mackay, who knew Lloyd Bendall quite well, and David was saying that at the end of 77, he and the club had a fallout. It isn't unique to today's state of affairs. It happened then. And Swan left and took up a position as assistant coach of Subiaco in the West Australian League. And he was going to play, but Carlton thwarted his opportunity to actually take to the field. So he served as assistant coach to Brian Dooge, the former Hawthorn player. And it was early in 78, Swan related this story, that Lloyd Bendall came across, sent by the club as an emissary, to say to him, we need you back. And he said he persuaded me to come back, and I played in the premierships of 1979 and 1981.
And so it was that simple?
Just it was that simple.
Go and fetch him from Perth?
It was that simple. And I came away from that interview with David thinking, if only we could do that. If only today you could click your fingers, go and get a player and solve the problem. But unfortunately, as we all know, there's no quick fix. And there's going to be a lot of, analysis and a lot of, you know, deep thinking and a lot of probably more heartache to come before we find a way through this and get the Carlton Football Club back on an even keel. So there's no easy way.
But do you not see that, as you say, that is, I guess, part of the problem, and it's also the reality that recruiting days gone by, that was great, we could do that then, we can't do that now. Have we properly adjusted to that reality? And the fact is we haven't recruited properly or well enough, you could say, apart from a few exceptions.
Well, that's true. It's a fair point you make, and I guess to that end you have to hope that the new list manager of the club can get Carlton through by bringing into the club the players that we need, you know, players that are capable of playing well on the field for Carlton, players that are capable of leading the way for Carlton, and players that are capable of, you know, doing what Sir Kenneth Luke always said, you know, respect the Guernsey, and the Guernsey will respect you. So we just have to hope that will transpire. We probably won't know until draft day, and we probably won't know until 2 or 3 years after draft day as to whether the decisions have been made have been the right decisions. But you just have to hope that, you know, the right systems are put in place and the right decisions are then made.
Let's talk about Friday night, because we're talking about, I guess, the larger malaise. We're looking at symptoms as well. We saw evidence of what's wrong on Friday night. There's a few things obviously I want to talk about there. First thing, the tackle count. What, to me, that's football 101. That is applying pressure to your opponent, making them earn every possession. I didn't see that. Where does that lack of rate of effort come from?
Well, tackling, as you say, is one of those non-negotiables. You know that all players, you know, it's part of the DNA.
Yeah.
But I think what's happened is because of this, you know, whatever reason, guys are off edge, that little nth factor, whatever it is, that where players find the will to do those one percenters and to deliver on those one percenters is suddenly, you know, bereft. And then it's like chasing down players too, to lay the tackle. You've got to have guys that are committed to the chase, you know. Ideally, you'd want them to get the ball first and foremost, but if they have to run down a guy or man up or do those little selfless team acts, well, they have to be up for the fight, you know. And unfortunately, none of our players have that at the moment, because there's this sad lack of confidence.
Yeah, and a lack of team cohesion, as
absolutely.
You say.
That, absolutely. I did see glimpses of it, though, Tony, and I will not steal your thunder because I know where you're going to go with this. But the return of Cade Simpson. Now, you know, you see
I love that man.
And I've heard commentators over the weekend reflecting on that game, not aligned with the Carlton Football Club, who have lauded Simpson for the way he goes about his football. And as you say, you absolutely love the way that bloke plays. You know, he's a credit to his club. He's a warrior. He always has been. And we need more like him, that's for sure.
Leaves nothing on the paddock, to use an old saying. And on Friday night, I'm going to get to that thing. Friday night, I was there with my soon-to-be-9-year-old son, Rafe. The club was kind enough to organise access to the rooms before the game. So we saw the whole warm-up. So Rafe got to see everything. Got to see Juddy doing his stretches, Mick playing kick-to-kick with Daisy, all the players out there. And it was Simo, the one who was G'ing them up. That's something that I saw, and other players too. But it was mainly Simo.
You missed an opportunity there, though, because did your little boy could have taken in a bucket of sand,
and he
could have tipped it out in the front there, and then you could have got a stick and drawn a line through it.
Oh.
And the line in the sand might have actually been helpful.
Well, it could have. Well, we know the result, but there was. And I hope to God that this is a sign of the future. Cameron Wood and Selwood, that just animated the members area where I was. People just stood up and said, you know what, it was worth 100 metres, it was worth the goal.
Absolutely.
Just to see some fair dinkum mongrel. And somebody, tell me Selwood didn't have it coming. Loved it.
Far be it for me to say I told you so, Tony, but last week I called on someone to start a fight swing a forearm or do something just to show that there is life in the old dog. And Cameron Wood, to his absolute credit, showed a bit of bottle. And it was actually a highlight to see Selwood not get his own way.
Yes.
And I mean, I'll give credit to Ed Curno here too.
Yes,
because
he did a great job, and
Selwood was clearly frustrated.
He was, but earned one of his characteristic staging frees right in front of Geelong goals. Lifted the arm in a tackle, made it look like the arm had gone too high. Free paid against our bloke. And how the umpires do not know that Selwood has massive form in that area. Still fell for it, of course.
Yes.
Armfield getting pushed in the back. Apparently that was failure to dispose of the ball properly. Tut was being held. I could see it from where we were sitting.
Yep.
Umpire 20 metres away didn't see it.
Yes.
Didn't get the free anyway. Tut either assisted or got the goal. That was one. It was a snap from our goal square.
I thought he was busy.
He was busy. They showed glimpses there, but I'm obviously not going to say that was the reason we lost the game. But there was momentum. We were only three goals down
in the second quarter.
Yeah, and we had momentum. We had the run of play, and there was a couple of two or three decisions that blew the margin out to six goals, and then was it.
I think there were a couple of opportunities we didn't take at that vital period too.
True.
But we at least did show some spine in that period. Unfortunately, it fell away from then on, really. But it was heartening to see, guys having a crack. And Cameron Wood, that moment with Selwood, it stood out like a beacon.
Mm.
And it was great to see. I agree with you. I love that.
Yeah, the replay was especially thrilling, I've got to say. having seen it from, about 100 metres away and then seeing it up on the big screen, I was very happy with that, I got to say.
I tell you what was demoralising. I walked around to the concourse behind the goals at the the Lock It In, I think it is, where the Carlton cheer squad were stationed.
Mm.
And unfortunately, we were outnumbered by Geelong's backup cheer squad. Their cheer squad was up the other end, but the ring-ins were hovering behind the goals.
Yeah.
And they were getting into this slanging match with our cheer squad. And I hate to say it, but I think they had the numbers.
That's not a good sign when the cheer squad decide that they've got something better to do on a Friday night.
Wasn't
good. Hello, I must say hello to Vinny, who was a faithful listener of the Carlton podcast, who I got talking to.
How is he? Suitably demoralised?
Well, he left before I did. let's put it that way. And he left at the start of the last quarter.
You've got to stay to the bitter end, Tony.
Well, yes, you do.
It's character building.
Well, unless you've got an 8-year-old who's very keen to get home because he's got footy training the next morning. But no, it stayed as long as was
humanly possible.
Yeah, thank you. And we can keep coming back to this point, Tony. We keep too. Is it the nadir, as they say? Oh. Is it rock bottom? We've faced Sydney in Sydney, and anybody who knows Carlton history knows that even in our best year, we couldn't topple Sydney.
No, that's very true. 95 was we went down to Sydney on the SCG, came back, lost to St Kilda at Waverley, and then won the next 16 on the trot, including the flag. Let's hope it is the nadir, Tony. Can we still win it? With 16 on the trot after this game and next?
You and I both know the answer to that, so does everybody.
I'll tell you this, it is the 70th anniversary year of the Bloodbath Grand Final, Carlton versus
too.
South here, and Ken Hands is the only surviving member he would be pushing on his 90th year, I'd say, yeah. Ken Hands. But that was the day that... Carlton met South here at Princes Park. I think I've gone over this story before. But
it's a great story. 1945.
Yeah, we had something...
couldn't use the MCG because it was still being used by the
Americans?
US Army.
That's correct. That's correct. So the game was held here. And interestingly enough, the ground at Princes Park wasn't completely foreign to South Melbourne because South... not many people would know, for a period of time through the 40s, used Princes Park as a... they were a co-tenant here for a very, very brief period. So the ground wasn't exactly foreign to them.
Okay, but it wasn't, strictly speaking, a BCT. It wasn't a battle of the co-tenants in 1945.
Not precisely. I think it may have been because of the war that South were relocated here for a period, but it wasn't long. But what we do know is that, people had just come back from the war to watch that game, and Bob Chitty led Carlton out, and... Chitty was ferocious Carlton captain. And this was, dubbed bash ball. This was a frightening meeting of the two teams. And something like 9 players reported on 15 different charges. And always remember, the story of Fred Fitzgibbon, who was rubbed out for Carlton after the second semi against Collingwood. Mm. And actually, the story was that he jumped the fence when the Blues broke out here at in South, and jobbed another South player and got an extra 4 weeks in his civilian gear.
Yeah.
I think he was on the interchange bench and ran on, but nonetheless, there was hell to pay that day, and there were bottles and all sorts of stuff coming over the fence.
Now, were most of the, sort of tribunal and the reports, they were held at Nuremberg, apparently.
There was a player for South Melbourne, Jim Cleary, who listeners might remember in later life was one of the resident panellists on World of Sports football panel. Gentleman Jim Cleary, he was known as, played for South Melbourne. And the very last episode of World of Sport, he took the liberty to eyeball the lens and say that I'd like to state here and now that I was innocent of all charges arising from the 45 bloodbath, to which the late Bob Davis replied, "But Jim, you copped 8. So I don't think that the Cleary's call necessarily carried too much weight, but there you have it.
But
wouldn't you love to see
a bit of that
Friday
we need,
night?
Okay, what we need to do on Friday night is obviously stack the stalls at the SCG with returned soldiers from Afghanistan and
we
Iraq.
We want khaki in the crowd. That's what we want.
Yeah, that's what we need. But look, as I said many times, I was told once that the players wanted to basically show their toughness to those returning soldiers, the men who had been tested in battle, and a lot of the blokes playing hadn't served, they hadn't been in New Guinea or Southwest Pacific, they hadn't fought in Europe, and they were making a statement of their own, I guess.
Yes, and the late Jim Clark tells it best, where he mentioned that after the game, he bumped into one of those returned soldiers and said to him, "What did you think of that?" To which the returned soldier replied, "I thought I was at the wrong bloody war." So that's what we want. We want a bit of G&D at the SCG on Friday night. Thank you very much.
We can only wish our boys the very best of luck. They are Yeah, look, they're playing obviously an in-form Sydney. They beat Hawthorn on Saturday night.
Great win. Yeah. Great win, great game, great contest. And, you know, with ebbs and flows right through. And, I mean, they started brilliantly, the Swans. Hawthorn pegged them back. And yet Sydney still found a way. And could have gone either way at the finish. Rioli takes that ball and it's all over for the Swans. But one of the great games of the year, really.
Need to know, Tone, last week there was suggestions that Jammo would be back, that Hendo would be back. How are they looking for this week? Or is it too early to tell? I guess it would be.
I can't give you a reading on it. I'm not sure where either player is at the minute. You'd like to think Lockie would be close. But again, I'm not 100% sure. Jammo, I'm not so sure about. Mm. But look, you just have to hope that, you know, whoever takes the field is actually going to give us something.
You go to the rooms beforehand and you have on a loop Cameron Wood versus Josh Selwood, and you play that over and over and over and over again.
Yeah, no, absolutely. When you're in the rooms...
Did I get Josh Selwood or Joel?
Joel. I got it right. When you're in the rooms, just a matter of interest, Tony, I don't venture down there because that's their space at that time.
Yeah.
But so I'd be curious to know what your thoughts were of how the players were in terms of their preparations. You know, did you see the whites of their eyes? Were the eyes rolling and were they ready to go? How did you assess the psyche of the players before they ran out?
It all seemed quite, workmanlike, I guess you'd call it. You wanted kind of eye of the tiger. You wanted, I guess in my mind's eye, half a cow carcass was thrown in amongst them and they tore it to pieces with their bare teeth. Juddy, of course, having first go as the ranking male.
Was I the tiger playing?
No, there's nothing going on like that. It was all just stretching, players wandering in and out, getting massages. And it was a day at the office.
Mm.
And
it's interesting. Interesting observation, you know. Yeah. Just on the game itself, there was a moment at game's end where Cam Guthrie for Geelong changed Guernseys with the great man, had requested the great man's Guernsey.
What was all that about?
Well, the story goes that Cam Guthrie was he saw Judd as his hero as a kid and followed his career with great interest all the way through and admired Chris Judd for his capacity as a league footballer. All that's fine, but to tell you the truth, if I was Juddy, I wouldn't have given up my Guernsey, and I'll tell you why. Some years ago, I interviewed a man named Harvey Dunn, the late Harvey Dunn Jr. Harvey's father, Harvey Dunn Sr., played for Carlton in the 30s, was a good player, and Harvey Dunn Jr. actually became the first player in league football recruited under the father-son rule in, I think it was about 1951-52. Bob Pratt's son was second, and Ron Barassi Jr. was the third player drafted. They picked up under that rule. The rule, they said, was introduced to ensure that Ron Barassi went to Melbourne. That was the premise behind that rule. But Harvey Dunn Jr. I got to interview some years ago, and he was talking about a game in which he represented Carlton, I think, at reserve grade level in a premiership in the early 1950s. And he said that before the game, the coach of the team, I think was Mickey Price, another Carlton premiership player, had told them in no uncertain terms, win, lose or draw, you are not to swap Guernseys with your opposition player, because to wear that Guernsey, you've earned the right to wear it, and the Guernsey should be respected and not handed away willy-nilly.
Yeah.
So that was interesting. It was just Harvey's take on what the Guernsey meant to him.
Mm.
And, I mean, look, I know we live in different times, but when I saw that happen, I immediately thought of Harvey Dunn and thought, I wonder what he'd make of that. You know, you don't... It's just not just a cast-off. You know, you hang on to it. And I hope it doesn't set a trend now in footy where, you know, does Juddy go out every week and when the game ends he just takes off his top and throws it over to whoever. But that was a little observation that I made about that. You know, I understand people say it was a nice touch and so forth, but I'd prefer him to have hung on to that Guernsey, to be truthful.
Yeah, I'm inclined to agree. I think after a loss like that, you basically want to see them I don't know, go into the room of mirrors and be having a good hard look at themselves rather than indulging in touching gestures like that. But was that the time for it? Maybe not.
And in fairness,
said, look, I'll post it to you or we'll catch up for coffee or whatever. But
in fairness to him, he's probably put on the spot. The cameras are on him.
Yeah.
Well, what do you do? But I think I would have hastened my retreat from the ground and got into the rooms as quickly as possible. Guernsey on.
Yes. Well, I think that's it should be a universal truism, I think, Tone, that the jumper is sacred.
Mm. Absolutely. Absolutely.
So that's a rare rebuke for Chris Judd on the Carlton podcast.
Sorry about that, Chris.
He will emerge from that. He's a great man and we love him. Don't ever think otherwise. But some things must be sacred in life, and I think definitely the Guernsey for players should be one of them. Tone, let's look at players who have played for both Sydney Swans and the South Melbourne Football Club.
And we begin with one of the true cult heroes of the Carlton Football Club, the man with the afro, the man with the fro, the bro with the fro, Vin Kitojo. What a player he was for Carlton. You know, Tony said that when he was playing local footy, because his mum and dad still live in a house in Garden Street in the shadows of the Legend Stand here.
Really?
Yes.
Wow.
Lived here for years. But he said that when he was playing local footy, his junior coach that brought the team up to Royal Parade and encouraged them to, evade or not evade because they weren't moving, but to run around the old elms here on on Royal Parade.
Yeah.
And it was there that Vin realised he had this evasive talent, this capacity to just dart and weave. And so good was he that the coach said, well, son, next week, if you get the chance, do it in your next game of footy. Well, Vinny was named in a back pocket this particular game, got the ball and remembered his coach's instructions and actually said that he got a tad carried away and weaved and dodged around 18 blokes as he ran the whole field and slotted one for the back pocket. And that was where the pirouetting skills of the great man was first really, put into practice. So he was a great player for Carlton. Went to Sydney, admits that he played his best football here at the club and was, scarred by being called up as, a 19-year-old for the 73 grand final.
Yeah.
Baptism of fire that really, really set him back. But Vin, it should be noted, was both a Morrish and Gardner medalist.
Really?
Yes.
Wow.
A great player at junior level and then reserve grade level. And is a cult hero here.
Yeah.
People remember him so vividly and a great fellow too.
How much faster would he have been if that hair wasn't providing so much resistance?
fair point.
He could have been the Usain Bolt of his day.
Very true.
Okay, let's go through these ones because there's a couple of names here I just want to skip over, and this is no disrespect to who these blokes are, but there's a cherry on top coming.
Peter Bedford,
Kennedy and Warren McKenzie.
Peter Bedford from my old alma mater of Parade College, Tone, was a man that played cricket for Victoria, and cricket was his first love. Even though he won the Brownlow Medal in 1970, he still always loved cricket and was a state player here.
Yeah.
And was unfortunately deprived the baggy green by an injury at bad timing. He was pretty close to earning selection at test level. Told me the story that at one stage he was invited to play for Port Adelaide in the Sandfall. This is probably around about mid to late 60s, I think, with the promise of representing South Australia, having been given the imprimatur by Sir Donald Bradman that he was to play. So it was an offer of playing football in the Sandfall with a guarantee of playing cricket for South Australia. But he knocked it back because he was a Port boy through and through and couldn't bear the prospect of leaving the South Melbourne area.
Yeah.
Was an understudy to Bobby Skilton. Came to Carlton towards the end of his career is a great fellow. Still gets around, still see him around the place. Lovely man. Just a quick one in closing on Peter Bedford.
Yeah.
When I interviewed Bruce Doole told me that he rated Peter Bedford as his greatest opponent.
Wow.
Which is interesting because Bedford was an elusive, good-moving you know, Rover come forward. And I think Bruce in his early career was not so much getting the key position players, but the flankers.
Yeah.
And he said he had awful trouble with Peter Bedford when Carlton played South in those early days of Dool's career. So it's interesting to hear that.
It's interesting to hear Bruce Dool having spoken about something at length.
Absolutely.
That's always good. I was just going to say Craig Bradley was another who could have represented Australia, certainly at state level in cricket and quite possibly national level.
Very true. Complete professional, you know. And yeah, I mean, Bedford and Bradley are, you know, of that ilk. They stand alone as great players, great footballers, great cricketers.
Before Josh Kennedy, there was Mick Kennedy.
Mick Kennedy, yes, played briefly at... in fact, he didn't get a senior game, I don't think, playing for the Swans. I might be wrong there. But Mick Kennedy was a member of the 87 Premiership team, a back pocket player. You know, good, honest, dependable flanker or back pocket player for Carlton. Don't know of his career at the Swans. I'm not sure how far he progressed with his footy there, but you know, is in the record books as being part of that premiership team coached by Robert Walls.
Well, that is something. That is
Warren McKenzie. Warren McKenzie, whose son is going around currently at league level. Regrettably, we couldn't get his boy because Warren hadn't played 100 games. But Warren again was part of the 87 Premiership team. Nice fella. Tweets a bit. Still see his... and he's got a very dry wit too, I might add. And a close student of Carlton and where it's heading. He keeps an eye on the team and isn't frightened to give his two bobs worth. So if you're in the Twitter sphere, get on a Macca.
I don't know what you say about the following player. I you know what? All you can say about him, that despite having played for Sydney, this bloke is dipped in Carlton, bleeds old dark navy blue. I love this man.
Go on, Tony, you name him.
David Rhys-Jones. I love this man.
Well, you know, Rhys, we were talking about earlier about, you know, Cameron Wood and the way, you know, he took Selwood on. Well, Rhys, he didn't care, did he?
No, I've said this many times, Tony. Get onto YouTube and look at any compilation of David Rhys-Jones. The playing is exciting enough, but his dust-ups with opponents are magnificent.
David David Rhys-Jones worked on the premise that if there was a head to be kicked, he'd kick it. But let's not sell his playing ability short.
He was astonishing.
You know, the game's most reported player, I recall. In fact, I remember... he was up for the Battle of Britain. You know, his number was taken in that ugly affair over at the Oval in London. And I can remember the tribunal sequel. It was about 3 months later. You know, it was the end of the season, so they finally got around to it. Might have been the new year, and he fronted up at VFL House and Jimmy Buckley, and there was a host you know, Carlton characters there that night, and they knew that they were going to be there for the long haul, so they ordered pizzas. And I can remember standing at the front of the tribunal room, and this bloke turns up in the elevator holding 12 boxes of, you know, Hawaiian pizzas for the meeting room. So, but Rhys, look, you know, I mean, the man that quelled Dermot Brereton, we've talked about the 87 grand final. Yeah. You know, his performance on Brereton pretty much was the pivotal matchup that got Carlton across the line. And, got him and Norm Smith. And all power to Robert Walls for his courage of conviction in going with Rhys-Jones on Brereton as opposed to John Dorotich. You know, John Dorotich would by rights have got Dermot and played on him through the course of the year, but Walls, to his credit, said, no, Rhys-Jones is the man, and Rhys-Jones was the man that day. And I might say of Rhys too, you've probably noticed his post-match comments from the rooms on the current website. He's doing a little bit of work there.
Yes, he's doing great work.
Post-match, yeah, he's doing a good job. So, but as you said earlier, you know, Carlton through and through. Yeah. What a career move that was, you know, move back from the Sydney. I mean, he was one of the pioneers, wasn't he, from the South players that went north.
Yep.
They were training at the Lake during the week and then going up to play, him, Bernie Evans, a lot of those players. Bernie was a great player for Carlton too.
You know that situation doesn't work. You remember Macca in 95 or 96, I think it was, he was studying his veterinary degree up in Brisbane and flying down for the games.
Yes.
That's not a great way to go.
No.
He wasn't training with the team, but he was flying down for games. And it affected his career.
That's very true. Although I was disappointed that the Rhodes Scholar wasn't darting back from Cambridge in the 70s to play over a weekend.
Where's your commitment? Come on. So that's David Rees-Jones, great servant of the club, and continues to be, as you said, Tone. Check him out on the Carlton website for some pretty forthright reviews of the games at the moment. Darren, I'm not even going to have a go.
Oja,
thank
Darren
you.
Darren Oja, played a handful of games, mainly a forward, maybe deprived of opportunity, didn't really get a good crack at it here. Was on the books for a little while, but never really broke through. Bernie Evans, I mentioned a moment ago, Tone. You know, thinking of Bernie, one of the unluckiest players not to have got a Guernsey in that grand final of 87. You might recall that he was rubbed out, I think, for hitting Di Piedomenico in the lead-up final. And it was cruel, deprived him of an opportunity to be part of that premiership moment. Never got the opportunity you know, afterwards. And I always remember the night of the Southern Cross grand final night. A lot of the players had retired to their rooms that night. That was a 33-degree day, and most of the players were dehydrated. I can remember David Glascott and Naylor and those blokes. They didn't surface until about 3 or 4 hours into the function because they were so spent. But Bernie Evans, to his credit, you know, despite the massive disappointment, was there to support the team on that night.
That takes character.
That's right. And he was actually best of field, I'm pretty sure, in that second semi against Hawthorn. So it was tragic that he didn't get his opportunity.
There's a few of those in the annals of football, and they're always a always a kind of tragic story there. Simon Mintle Connell, you could only say football journeyman, played with about, well, it's got Bulldogs and Hawthorn there, but as we know, he played for Carlton and South Melbourne. How many players have actually played for four clubs over a career?
There'd be a handful of players, probably a few more that have done that. Simon Mintle Connell, you know,
his family was Carlton. They ran a pub here in Carlton.
Yes,
didn't they?
Yes. Yeah. They actually had the Carlton Hotel, which was in Gertrude Street up near the exhibition buildings.
Okay,
it's since closed. And then I think
they
Adrian
on Cardigan Street. Didn't they?
Yeah, or Rathdown. I think it was Rathdown. Adrian Mitten Connell, Simon's father, ran that hotel. Was a good player in his own right in Tasmania. Mitten Connell was known as the Loaf. I think it was because he had a head like a loaf of bread. And I once asked him. He was in this Crew Cup phase, you know, and I said, why the Crew Cup? He said, the magnificent thing about sporting a Crew Cup is that when you get out of bed of a morning, you don't have to comb. advice I took on board.
Never going to work himself to death, in other words.
No. I think he won a game for Carlton out here with a memorable kick late in the game at Princess Park in that period of time through the late 80s, early 90s. Pretty good player, actually.
He was. Now, there's some big names coming up, so we should rip through this list, Tone. Mark Athorn.
Mark Athorn was a member of the 93 grand final team. Not great.
No.
Greg Williams.
Well,
reasonable, you know, a fair player.
Yeah, whoever he was. Alan Thorpe,
Indigenous player who never got the opportunity to play a senior game for Carlton, if I recall. He actually might have slotted 5 in a night game for Carlton at one particular time at Waverley, if memory serves. And now you'll see Alan as a regular on Marnbrook.
Okay, great. Barry Mitchell. What more can you say? Great player. I loved watching Barry go around.
Great player. Of course, with Williams and Gerard Healy, they were, you know, they were the engine room for the Swans in those glory years at the SCG. Was through them that Warwick Capa probably got as many goals as he did. Well. And Barry had that awful, awful experience at Collingwood where he and Lee Matthews just didn't see eye to eye and it didn't work out. But he came to Carlton, played some good games for Carlton.
Yep. Yep, I remember him fondly. Damien Lang and Ricky Mott and Jason Saddington.
Yeah, well, Damien Lang, I couldn't tell you a lot about. Was only briefly on the scene, 1988. Ricky Mott was from originally from WA, which I think via the Swans. I think we got him Dan from Sydney. It was on the scene for a very, very brief period.
Right.
Hulking fellow, huge, huge, big, powerful man. Mm. And Jason Saddington played some reasonable games for Carlton too in that, you know, those dark, dark years.
Can I put you on the spot and say what number, ask what number Saddo wore?
Oh, gee, you are putting me on the spot there. Can I get back to you?
It was a number nine, that? I believe. Nine. It was number nine.
Yeah, okay. Very good call there from Julian, our producer. Okay. That's a very good call.
I don't know. I was just for some reason interested there. Anyway, it's an auspicious number of cards.
It is indeed.
And now the two current players that we have in the seniors list, Andreas Everett and Matthew Dick, both come from Sydney.
Yes, well, Andreas Everett, you know, was the man that Mick Malthouse went to Port Douglas to get back. He was on holidays between seasons, and Mick made the flight north to get Andreas Everett back to the club and made it a strong argument to get him to Carlton. Again, as sort of, you know, like a lot of his teammates, has been in different form this year. You have to hope he and they can turn it around pretty quickly. Matthew Dick is a player that you just want to see. I want to see given games.
Yeah.
And I think where we're at now, we want to see, you know, the newcomers given a little bit of time to show their wares. When we mentioned Vin Cotoggio earlier, Tone, I will tell you a story that he relayed to me 2 weeks ago when I saw him. He said that when he started out at Carlton early on the piece and Big Nick was captain coach, Nichols told him, Vinny, you've got the next four in a row. Whatever happens, you're playing the next four. And he said it was a tremendous thing for my confidence to know that I wasn't playing on a knife's edge, that, you know, one bad game here or there and I'd be out of the team. And he said in that four-week window, I actually got a BOG and third best on ground. And he said after that third best on ground, he said, Nick came back to me and he said, you've got another four.
So
you know, I think there's a lot to be said about it.
There especially where we are at the moment, you know, no risk is too idiotic, you could say.
Well, that's right. That's
because
right.
What's the worst that could happen? Well, certainly nothing worse than
absolutely
that already has.
And let's face it, we're in a situation now where we want to see which of our players are going to be there for the long haul and which of our players really want to play for Carlton. So for players like Matthew Dick, I want to see him play and let's get a fair assessment of you know, whether they're part of the Carlton cause through into 2016 and beyond.
Show a bit of Cameron Wood, boys. Show a bit of Cameron Wood.
I couldn't agree with you more, Tony. I think it's times like these, they come along from time to time, you know, but these are the times where you want your supporters to support, and never before has support been more important for Carlton in 2015. And you come through it sooner or later. You get through a period of time like this. You know, we don't know when it will end. We don't know how it will end. All we know is that it will end. And I think the upside to all of it is when the winds finally come along again. And we build momentum, well, then it's going to be all the more sweeter to savour. So all I can say is for Carlton people, Tone, we feel their pain. Please stick fat and let's get through this together, because right now the Carlton Football Club is under siege and all we really have is each other.
Beautifully put, Tony DeBolfo. This has been the Two Tones, Tony DeBolfo, Tony Moclair. We will be back next week. We're not going anywhere, as far as we know. We have the continued confidence of the board. So we will be back doing the Two Tones next week. As we said, stay true. We are the old Dark Navy Blues. We are a great club with a great history and, more importantly, a great future. We just have to believe that.
Well said.